is Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Good afternoon and happy June. It's officially summertime. Welcome into Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Grace Remington, joined by Will Hill. We are here for the next 3 hours, taking you through all of today's sports action. We got plenty of baseball. The NBA Finals are set, so we'll start to break down that series. The Stanley Cup Final, of course, has been set. We'll get back into that again. We have NASCAR later today. Lots going on, but we had a pretty good day yesterday, Will. I would, dare I say, it was our best betting day since doing this show together. Wrapped up, of course, by the Nationals and all the runs they scored on Brandon Pfaadt in the first inning. So to anyone who tailed me on that Nats team total over, the Nats plus 70 full game, the Nats plus 155 first five, we did it. We did it. But let's do it again today, Will.
Yeah, what's going on? Should be fun. That was one where I was watching the basketball, and you know, we had gone back and forth on the game, and I'll give you full credit, as deserved. You were all over the Nationals, Nationals to score runs, Nationals first five, full game, team total over. I thought the Diamondbacks would hit Soroka, but I was kind of wish-washy on the game. I didn't really find a way to play it that I loved, but man, that's one where we were just talking about it before we came on. If you bet every Nationals batter to either get a hit or score a run, you cashed all nine bets in the first inning. The first 12 guys reached base. It was a game. I checked it out. I was watching the basketball, kind of peeking back and forth at the baseball scores, Yankees, Dodgers. There's nothing to watch there. It was 18-2. That one went way over, obviously. But it was 3-0, two on, nobody out. I said, man, that's a bad start. Three runs, first five batters get on base. That's a really bad start. Check back when you're watching some Knicks Pacers. Knicks crawling, trying to crawl back in the game. 5-0, still nobody out. Wow, this is getting bad. Eventually, it's 10-0, two men on, nobody out. The first 12 base runners reach base, or the first 12 batters reach base for Washington. And I think the craziest thing about all of this, if you bet Brandon Pfaadt under hits allowed, which is at 6.5 with some juice, you cashed because they finally took him out with six hits in the first inning, a couple walks, a couple hit by pitch. I think C.J. Abrams got hit by pitch three times. Four is would have been the standalone record, I believe. So all sorts of records. I think you have some historical context for what was just a crazy Nationals Diamondbacks game. As we got a bunch of baseball games going on right now that we'll update soon here.
Right. The Nationals' first 11 batters reached base, which is the second most in the big league since 1961. And there are 11 batters reaching before and out, plus those 10 runs scored in the first inning, the most ever in Nationals franchise history, which goes back to 2005. So a historical first inning. I didn't go back and look at the play-by-play. That Abrams got hit by a pitch twice in that first inning by two different pitchers. Oh, my gosh. That was fun. A nice little pat-in of the bankroll there last night. I'm ready to do it again today. But we got three games coming up here in a few minutes or the next hour or so. So let's give those bets out before we miss them. Starting with the Twins and the Mariners, what are we at now? Because this line has moved. I'll tell you, I bet the Twins plus 124 last night. They are plus 110 now. Seattle is minus 131. And we have a low total here, 7.5. What are you looking at in this one?
Yeah, game last night, Minnesota was up 3-0 pretty early. Seattle cut it to 3-2, eventually tied it. They go to the ninth where Seattle had pulled ahead with a two-run homer. I think it went from 3-2 to 4-3 Seattle. Twins tied in the ninth. Twins had all sorts of chances in the 10th, I think in the 11th. You know, ghost runners, first and third, nobody out. Bases loaded, one out, couldn't get a run home. Eventually, Seattle wins it. Tough beat if you had Minnesota. Minnesota first five did cash. Miller got knocked around. Tough handicap. I don't love Castillo. He's a guy I used to love to bet on. Mm-hmm. He's just sort of an average pitcher now. The swing and miss stuff is not there. He's just not as dominant as he used to be. He's just maybe average, slightly above average. If I had to play anything here and I didn't, I would lean towards, and there's an over 7 at pretty reasonable juice. Over 18.5 outs recorded for Castillo. Now, that 18.5 is a key number. Mm. If he only pitches six innings, which, you know, sometimes these guys just go the full six innings and they come out, the 18.5 over would lose. But I'm going to go over at the plus money just because the bullpen for Seattle is in rough shape. They went into extras Friday night. They went into multiple extras on Saturday. I think the top end guys, Munoz and Brash, the setup guys are available, but I don't know about those sort of middle relievers that have gotten a lot of work here. So Castillo's an innings eater. He's a workhorse. I could see them getting, you know, 19, 20 outs. Maybe they try to push him for the full seven innings just with the state of the bullpen. So I'm indifferent on the game. I leaned over on the total as far as props, Castillo over outs. What are you looking at here in terms of a handicap?
Well, I played the Twins because I think these teams should be rated much more closely in this game than they are at the moment. But looking at your Castillo outs in his 11 starts, he's gone over six innings just twice, and those were pretty clean games. So I think your thought process of the Seattle bullpen being kind of worn down makes some sense here. They would kind of force Castillo to keep going back out there. But looking at the underlying metrics for both of the pitchers here, Chris Paddock and Luis Castillo, they're really similar. And I feel like Castillo and the Mariners are just getting by on some name brand here. But both of them have an expected ERA above four. Castillo's is actually worse. They have an expected FIP above 4.3. And he used to be such a high strikeout upside guy. His K rate is down to 19%. It looks like, I mean, the velo is down on three of his four pitches. So obviously that's a problem. He's also getting hard hit at a really high rate. It keeps increasing over the past three seasons. So I really just think this is mispriced based on name value. And then even going beyond that, Minnesota's bullpen has ranked number one in the month of May, with the highest strikeout rate and best walk rate. The Minnesota offense also ranks higher in that time span. So when I saw plus 124, had to jump on it. The market moving with me here at plus 110. I think you could still play it at that price. Moving on to the Nationals and Diamondbacks. The Nats, another heavy underdog here, plus 185. The D-backs minus 225, although this price a bit more warranted than the one we saw last night because Corbin Burns toeing the rubber for Arizona today, and it's Mitchell Parker on the other side. A high total of 9 now. It's moving up. What do you like here?
Not much. Maybe a Burns over strikeout prop. He's been better recently after a pretty shaky start to his season where, you know, they gave him a big contract, didn't really live up to it the first month, 6 weeks. He's been better. Strikeout numbers have been better, so maybe he's found something here. Look, Arizona, they've lost 8 of 9 now. It's not their bats. They're hitting the ball. I mean, they scored 7 runs last night. They went way over the team total. So I think this is a spot to get on track. Mitchell Parker is nothing special to say the least. So I think if I had to play anything, Burns over K's, I think 5.5 is a reasonable number. Minus 1.5 for Arizona. You're not getting the ninth at bat. Do you really have the guts to pull the trigger on that where you're laying a 1.5? You're the home team. You don't bat in the bottom of the ninth if you're winning most likely. It's a big price for a team that's lost 8 out of 9, but I don't love Parker. I think Burns is on track, so it would be pro Arizona ways to play this. How are you looking at this? Are you going back to the well there with your Nats, or are you less optimistic today, day after?
I really wish I could, but I don't dislike Burns that much. I do think he's due some negative regression, but this pitching matchup is, you know, the gap is there that I think these prices make sense. For Mitchell Parker, it's only his second season in the MLB. His strikeout rate is way down. His walk rate is way up. He should have some regression come on his fastball. Corbin Burns, he has gotten better through this season, as you said. Like, he had a really low strikeout rate to start the season. He's pulled it up to 23%, which is still way below his career average. It's typically hovered around 28-29%. I think the problem there is the whiff rate on his curveball. It's gone down. It was at its best, a 50% whiff rate in 2021, and has decreased since then. Now it's only at 30%. But the spin rate is down on his cutter too. The velo is down. So definitely, you know, could be father time at work here, but he has tightened up. I do think he's due some negative regression here. So I liked the over 8.5. I don't know if that's available anywhere. I'm taking a look now. You can get an over 8.5 at -130 or the over 9 at -115. I think I might just stay off this one tonight. But
you said something, yeah, though, that I think offends me. Father Time, he's 30 years old. Father Time, he's 30. He's not 40 or 42. He's 30 years old. I mean, Father Time, how dare you?
I should not say that for my own sake as well. I know it's weird. I was telling someone the other day, like, I think working in sports has warped my mind because we talk about all these athletes getting old.
Yeah.
But in real life, hey, we are young. We are spring chickens. We got our whole life ahead of us.
Sure. keep saying
it. Don't worry. I won't say that again. Yeah. Hey, you got to believe it. All right, let's get the next game. We have Pirates Padres. We have time to get that one in. So we'll do that on the other side of this one. Coming up later on in the show, though, we got two guests for you. Quentin Mills from NCAA Insiders is going to give us some College Baseball World Series bets, and Jordan Robinson, host of the Women's Hoop Show, going to talk through some WNBA for us. But if you want to bet smarter this football season, get ahead of the action, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a full year for just $199. Plus, you'll get a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Josh Applebaum, a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smarter NFL bets. Sign up now and get instant access to a daily email with all the best bets from hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, and 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use the promo code BOOK.
This is Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Grace Remington with Will Hill. We got you some early bets for these baseball games about to throw first pitch. Let's get the next one for the afternoon. Pirates at Padres. This one, first pitch about to be thrown in less than an hour. But the Padres, a -150 favorite here. Pittsburgh +125 with a total of 8.5. Will, did you put anything on this game?
Yeah, until you said that, I didn't realize this was a 5 o'clock Eastern start, 5:10 Eastern. That's unusual for a Sunday afternoon. Usually, It's 4 o'clock. I'm not sure what the purpose of the pushing this first pitch back all the way to 5 o'clock Eastern is. That being said, I don't love either pitcher Heaney and Vasquez, two former Yankees. Coincidentally, each had a cup of coffee with the Yankees very briefly. I don't love either pitcher. I don't love either lineup. Neither team's really hitting. The Padres, for all the names they have in the lineup, and Machado and Tatis, you go down the line, you expect them to score some runs. They have not hit. They have not hit well for a while here. Under 4.5 in the first five. I get the sense that you're kind of opposite me here. I get it. Vasquez is due for some regression. Heaney is, his regression has caught up to him a bit here. So again, it's not like I love either pitcher here. I'm down on both lineups. So if I had to play anything, which I haven't yet, but we're sitting here doing the show, I'll probably put in a bet here before it starts. Under 4.5, even money for the first five. What did you look at with this game? How are you handicapping it?
So you mentioned the part that makes it difficult. It's this Padres offense, because they should be performing better and they're not. Definitely underperforming in power, but they do put the ball in play and they kind of chip away at opposing pitchers. I want to fade both pitchers here. I kind of lean over 8.5. You have 75 degrees, 70% humidity. Andrew Heaney, though, I think maybe a better way to fade him, take the over 1.5 walks for him at -120. Yes. He's gone over this line in 6 straight games. The Padres rank 10th in walks against lefties this season and 2nd in strikeout rate. So what they lack in hitting, they are pretty disciplined at the plate. Last time he faced the Padres was May 4th, and it was his shortest outing of the season. He went 3 2/3 innings, allowing 4 earned runs on 8 hits, including a home run, 4 walks in that game, and just 3 strikeouts. But his walk rate over 9%. So And it looks like he's due regression on his fastball, which he uses 45% of the time. So kind of want to fade Andrew Heaney here. I think we could have a weather boost. If you're looking for a home run prop, we could have some fun with that. Fernando Tatis is plus 475. He's been hitting well. He has the weather boost, and Andrew Heaney is bad for righty power. So I think there's a couple bets we can squeeze into there. I wonder, let's see, do we want to give out our early thoughts on this Sunday night baseball game? I know it hasn't been going well for your Yankees.
Yeah, you didn't need to bring that up. That was a tough loss yesterday. They were right there. Dropped a tough one. 18-2 happens to the best of me. Yeah, no, look, they've been completely outclassed by the Dodgers going back to the World Series. These first two games, even, you know, Friday night, they're up 5-2. They got their best pitcher on the mound, and they lose 8-5. I would just, we talked about it before the game last night. I like the over. I didn't love either pitcher. Both these offenses, it speaks for itself. Yamamoto is really good, but Yarbrough is nothing special. Yanks can probably scratch together, two, three runs maybe against Yamamoto. I don't really want to lay 170 against the Yankees. I'd probably just go back to an over nine here. It's gone well here the first two games. Both two games have gone well over. First two games have gone well over here, so it'd be over nothing. That's probably going to be how I'm playing that. What are you looking at here? Maybe Yarbrough under strikeouts too, because I know he had a handful of them last time against the Angels on Monday night. That was on Memorial Day. I think he got up to 6 or 7, but the Angels are not the Dodgers as we've seen here these last couple of days. So maybe Yarbrough under K's over 9 would be the way I'd play it.
We are seeing this one the same way too, because I like the over in this game. If you want to get that key number of 9, there's still an over 8.5 available at ESPN Bet. Of course, it's juiced to the over, minus 130. I wouldn't play it beyond that price. But yeah, both of these pitchers do negative regression here. Although Ryan Yarbrough, his strikeout rate is up from a career average of 18% to 25%. And his barrel rate and hard hit rate are low, which is interesting because, I would have thought moving from a long reliever to a starter, his stats would decrease, but I went and looked at his splits. His stats as a starter are actually better than as a reliever. But side note, kind of cool career moment for him because I said before, I covered him with the Rays. Just one of those dudes who's easy to root for, and they used him as an opener role a lot, and I just remember him talking about how he really wanted to be a starter, but then to land as a starter for the Yankees, I just think that's really cool.
But which athletes have you covered that you don't like? We have 5 minutes to cover here. We got a long show. There's not that many games. Just spill the tea. There's nobody listening. Who do you not like? Who was mean to you?
I don't know if I've had any actual meanies. I mean, I worked in Birmingham covering Alabama, and Nick Saban's not mean, but he's tough. And as a journalist, you have to be on your game just as much as his players have to be on their game at practice. If you ask a stupid question, he'll make you look stupid in front of everyone. But also, learned a lot of, this sounds dramatic and kind of weird, but learned a lot of good life lessons listening to him too. I know you're supposed to be unbiased in press conferences, but there were times I was whipping out my notes app and writing down his quotes. Cause I was like, ooh, yeah, that's a good one. I could use that. Trying to think of my first pro athlete interaction ever was Bryce Harper.
And I've heard that from other people. I've heard that from other people. He's not the best.
I think I was 20 years old. I was an intern at WRC in Washington, D.C., still a college student. And I was just in a media scrum in the Nats clubhouse and, working up the courage to ask a question, which is intimidating, not only asking someone like that a question as a newbie, but also trying to beat other reporters in, because everyone... Right. Yapping so much, you have to talk over other people. I don't remember. I just asked him something about a hitting slump, and he just gave me a three-word answer and just kind of stared me down. And I was like,
okay. Yeah, he was the one. Again. Somebody asked him something, and that's a famous meme of that's a clown question, bro. I'm sure you've seen that.
Yeah, what was the question? No, but that's true. Like, I won't say that's not him all the time. I do wonder, though, like, you see a new person in the clubhouse. They're young. They're clearly learning. Like, why are you? I know he doesn't right. owe it Little, to there's... me to be nice, but, like, still, come on.
Don't be a bully. I'm with you. All right, so Harper was one. Yeah. What's the rest of the list? What do we got? We 2 minutes till break. We got plenty of time.
I'm trying to think of, like, what about, like, nice ones? Like, you're trying to get me to air all the dirty laundry here. No, this could be no clipped fun. And posted all over social media, and then I lose my
it's the whole point. Yes, that's the whole point. We're going
to
tag him. We're going
to sabotage my career.
Yes.
Great. I really have to think about this.
Okay.
Ooh, I mean, I can think of actually an NFL quarterback's father who is
wow.
really feisty. Yeah.
Wow. The fact that you had to put that many qualifiers on it, you wouldn't say the player, you would just say a family member. Nope. That means it was bad. That means it was really bad.
He asked me to show up to his practice at a certain time. I got there 20 minutes early and he said I was late. And then he turned his back on me and walked away. And I sat there. In local news, you have to film your own stuff. The camera's like 15 pounds, so it's not easy work. And it was raining. So I stuck it out. I was like, all right, I'm going to prove to him I'm serious. I'm going to get my B-roll. If he doesn't give me the interview, whatever. But I stuck it out through the rain. And he came over an hour later and was like, I'm sorry about that. I think he was just in a mood, but I had heard from other people that he's really difficult to get along with.
Interesting.
His son is doing really well now in the NFL, and no one expected it. So you know what? Good for the son. And as well.
Interesting. All right.
Did we lose Mike? Do you have any experience as well?
Oh, no. I don't really deal with the athletes, so I have nothing to add. I just have we got another 2.5 hours here to dig here and see what we can get out of you.
I'll think about it. I know I have some stories. Right. I have to like scroll through my Instagram post to jog some memories. Okay, if you want to bet something else besides fading some of these quarterbacks.
This is Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the sports betting network. I'm Grace Remington with Will Hill. And now joining us on the Progressive guest line is Quentin Mills, the co-founder and co-host of NCAA Insiders. Joining us to share some thoughts on the College Baseball World Series and some bets as well. Quentin, happy Sunday to you. Thank you for joining us. I want to start with one of the biggest surprises of these regionals so far, and that's Oregon getting bounced as a minus 175 favorite. A lot of people, you know, were high on them to win the whole tournament. So how surprised were you by that result, and who do you think the region is open to now?
Yeah, I think they were surprised themselves. They were actually upset they didn't catch a national seed. And then come to find out, you go 0-2 barbecue, and you're being it was a short ride home, being that you're already at home, so we don't have to worry about travel. But, you know, I think Cal Poly can run through that. Cal Poly's been, a little undervalued all year. They can hit the ball. They have, you know, as good as mid-major pitching as you could probably ask for at this point in the season against these upper teams, but they have kind of that will and that it factor. They just kind of play for each other. So I really look for Cal Poly to step up in that region.
What's going on with Wright State? Where did you see, did you see this coming? Because they really should have won the game on Friday. They pulled the pitcher after 76 pitches with a no hitter. The coach had a terrible explanation after the game. You know, he walked a couple guys. I wanted to give them different looks, just made no sense. And now they lead Vandy again 5-1. What do you make of this in terms of a live number? Wright State laying a run and a half, minus 200. Do you think they hang on? And what's your takeaway between Wright State and Vandy so far?
I actually would take the -1.5. I think they handle business. I think they have a point to prove, as you mentioned. You know, the weird pulling of the pitcher Friday night's game, you know, you drop it late there, 4-3. I think they're, you know, Wright State's one of those teams consistently in and out. I mean, they had to be walked off against Tennessee in 2022. This is not a team that anybody wants in their region, as well as, you know, maybe in East Carolina or somebody like that. So anytime you get Wright State, you know, be aware, because they're coming for you, and they mean business. And we're seeing that, you know, unfold live as they continue a 5-1 lead against the number one seed in the country.
UC Irvine is the -145 favorite against Arizona State in a rematch. The winner of this one sees UCLA. Who do you like in this game coming up soon?
So I gave this out the other day. UC Irvine, just they had plenty of opportunities. They end up losing a 4-2 game against Arizona State's ace, Ben Jacobs. They're not going to have to face him this time. And I think there's a little animosity. They feel like they left some too many guys on. They left some runs, you know, on the base pass. And UC Irvine has been a team that they've shown they can bounce back all season long. Arizona State, I mentioned the other day in Mitch and Pauly's show, is you just don't know what, you know, team's going to show up. They can look like one of the top teams in the country, but then they can look like they are, you know, a high school varsity team. So I think in this spot, UC Irvine has something to prove. They want to get to the UCLA, you know, championship game, force a game 7, as you call it, on Monday. So I think the Anteaters are the play here.
How about Florida State? It's their regional. A lot of people say maybe they overachieve this year. We know they have the big-time left-handed prospect, Jamie Arnold, the pitcher, but they're about -215 against Mississippi State. Is this a number you're willing to lay? Is the dog live here? What are you looking for in this matchup?
So if you can get in on time, I think it's a great parlay piece with Tennessee or Oregon State. I think Tennessee's got too much power to handle for Wake Forest, especially they just depleted their bullpen. But then back to the Florida State team, I mean, they're so stacked. They have Joey Vellini, they have Wes Mendez, who's projected to start today as their Sunday guy. Incredible numbers. And then you already mentioned Jamie Arnold. Then you look on the offensive side, Miles Bailey's hit 6 home runs in 6 straight games, including a grand slam last night. Drew Ferreau, Max Williams, Alex Lodi, one of the best shortstops in the country. You know, Link Jarrett, a proven coach time and time again. They're just a complete team. I'm not a fan of Florida State for other rooting interests, but they are the team to be right now, I think. And Mississippi State, it's just they don't have the horses in the bullpen as well as at the plate, you know, in comparison to Florida State at home.
Oklahoma State pulled the upset earlier today against Georgia in Athens. They get Duke now, but the Blue Devils a -154 favorite. What do you like in this one?
It's probably a stay away. I know they're kind of on the motions right now. Now they're going to have about an hour to kind of simmer down. I don't necessarily like that. It's just the format of the tournament to get the games in. But Duke's been resting all day for this. You don't know who's pitching for Oklahoma State. It's a bullpen day. You just threw your ace today, so he's out. Duke is just one of those teams. They've caught fire the back half of the season offensively with guys. You know, Kyle Johnson, two-way star, pitched great last night, great stick. Andrew Miller, and, you know, you can name the rest of the lineup. They've all contributed, and I think you're going to get to a point where now you have two power-hitting teams that are going to continue, as they say in Athens, to feed the trees tonight. If you were to play a game, I'd probably say maybe an over if it's not too inflated. Then again, in this region, I don't really know what's an inflated number. It's been hitting, you know, over 16.5. So you could probably lay something pretty comfortably as long as it's sub 20.5.
Has anything in the first few days here changed your mind on a big picture in terms of who can win it all? Obviously, Georgia eliminated. As you mentioned, that's a shocking upset as Oak State walks them off. Vandy's been in some trouble here. Is anyone you think live that wasn't a few days ago or vice versa?
I'll tell you what, I've kind of said it on our show. I think Coastal is a live team, right? Like they, you know, we look at them as a mid-major. They obviously won it in 2016. Their coach, it's his first year, but he's been with the program for over 20 years. They have 3 guys that could start on, you know, Power 4 pitching rotation. In fact, 2 of them have at some point in their career. They just have a clutch hitting, you know, basic fundamental sound baseball. Right now they're thriving. They do everything right. You know, from a mid-major standpoint, when you have Wright State upsetting Vandy, when you have UTSA upsetting Texas, this Coastal team is far and away better than all of those teams, and there's no reason why they couldn't, with the right draw, make a good run into Omaha.
Quentin Mills, the co-founder and co-host of NCAA Insiders, joining us on the Progressive guest line now with his College Baseball World Series thoughts. Quentin, a lot of people, I think it's safe to say, are a bit more familiar betting the MLB than college baseball, but I'm looking at some of the markets here, and there's a lot of similar things to baseball. You have the first five, first three, first seven innings bets. You have team totals. So when you're betting these games, is there any angle that you like taking?
Sometimes I'll hit the first five. We always have a saying, college baseball, you know, bullpens and metal bats. You can never tell the final score of the game. So if you like a team that has a good ace, maybe a first five is a good approach to have if your book offers that line. The sport's growing, so sometimes it's hit or miss on those, but kill them if they're there, and then let the bullpen implode while you cash a ticket.
Who wins it all? Who wins the championship right now, you think?
I think UNC and Tennessee, as long as they play the way they did last year and to begin the season, are the teams, right? Like they lost six of seven series coming into the postseason, but they're defending champs for a reason. The talent is there. Tony Vitallo has been there three of the past 4 years. There's no indication. You know, obviously they're going to have to face Arkansas as long as they win tonight for a super regional, which is kind of a gauntlet in itself. But if they can get past Arkansas, I think that they could beat anybody in the field. Same for UNC. UNC has a pitching staff that's probably the best in the country from a starting rotation, and they have four to five guys that could step in there any given night. Bullpen is great on the back end. They have an established closer, a setup guy. It's very similar to a major league bullpen where you have that setup and then a closer. And then their bats are just clutch. They lose Vance Honeycutt, their star last year, and they just replace them with a bunch of gamers who just always have that knack to hit a ball in the gap, to score that extra run, to steal the extra base and make the plays. They're just right now, they're kind of bulletproof.
So Tennessee listed at plus 550 to win the World Series, UNC 7-1. You also mentioned Coastal Carolina 20-1. So LSU the favorite at plus 380. Are you feeling a little bit lower on them now?
I mean, I think they're a little more inconsistent in terms of, like, if I had to project a team who could make the run. You know, they've had some moments where they do have some transfer guys. They have some younger players that maybe have not stepped up in certain spots and then maybe have in others. But if I got to look at a team projected, I think Tennessee has the experience factor. I think they have the horses to do it. They're slowly getting an ace from their team last year, A.J. Russell back, which is just an added momentum. LSU, I think, can make it to Omaha. I just don't know where the bracket stands if they could get through that. They'd be on the tougher side of the bracket, so that would be difficult.
Awesome. Can you let us know where everyone can find your work?
Yes, on Twitter at Cumilly. That's three L's, two Y's. And then collegebaseballinsiders.com. We just released our VSiN College Baseball Regional Guide. We'll also have one for the Super Regionals as well as the College World Series. So be on the lookout for that. It's got jam-packed information, analytical data beyond belief. If you need anything explained, just hit us on Twitter. We'll explain everything. But it's got you covered for everything.
Awesome. Great stuff. Thanks so much for joining us today, and enjoy the rest of the regional games tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Quentin.
That was Quentin Mills, co-founder and co-host of NCAA Insiders. I know we're just talking about baseball, but don't forget about the ponies either, because the final jewel of the Triple Crown is here, the Belmont Stakes. And there's no better time to bet the races than right now at FirstBet. New users can get a $200 sign-up bonus. Just use the promo code VSIN200. Download the app or go to firstbet.com/VSIN to sign up today. That's firstbet.com/VSIN with the promo code VSIN200.
This is Live Bet Sunday on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the sports betting network. I'm Grace Remington with Will Hill, taking you through all the sports action today. Here's a couple baseball updates for you. The Stros leading the Rays 1-0 in the top of the ninth, but looks like they're about to, this game should be over. Looks like there's three outs here for the Rays. Cubs leading the Reds 7-2 in the middle of the eighth here. Twins and Mariners still scoreless, so my Twins money line still alive here, and the D-backs leading the Nationals 3-0 in the top of the third. We'll be tracking those baseball games throughout the show, but let's get into some hoops now, because our NBA finals are set with the Pacers beating the Knicks in game six last night. They will take on the Thunder, in which some are calling a David versus Goliath matchup. The odds would imply that. Thunder are a minus 700 favorite to win the series. Pacers are plus 500. Looking at the series spreads, OKC minus 1.5 games is minus 275. The game total set at 5.5, plus 115 to the over, minus 135 to the under. Just initial thoughts on this series now that it is official, Will.
Should be a quick one. Your Pacers, your Pacer yellow that you wore yesterday got you home. And I was actually thinking about you because the Knicks, I don't know if you were watching, you know, play by play here, but the Knicks were down one with like 40 seconds left in the half and had the ball. And I think you had Pacers first half money line, but Knicks got stopped. Pacers hit a three. It was 53-52. Knicks had the ball, 30, 40 seconds left. Knicks miss, three-pointer, 56-52. Knicks turn it over, 58-52. And after that, it really never got close again. Knicks made a shot at the buzzer to make it four. Quickly after half, it went 14-15. Knicks had a couple chances where they cut it to eight. There was 1-3 at 15, actually at 12. It looked like they cut it to nine. They called McBride out of bounds. Based on everything I saw on Twitter, he didn't look out of bounds, but it was basically a Pacers runaway the second half, so good call by you. I've seen a couple things on Twitter, just being on Twitter as this game was ending, that I'm not sure I agree with. The first is this idea that the Knicks are so close to being a contender, piece here, piece there, they can win a championship. I don't know. To me, the East is the JV bracket. Whoever came out of this series was going to get absolutely rolled by OKC. And the other is that this is going to be some great, exciting series. I understand and I agree from a pace standpoint, from just an aesthetic standpoint, some fresh blood, fast-paced teams, this series is going to be fun. But, the idea that the Pacers are going to keep track here or keep up with the Thunder, I just don't buy whatsoever. I think that the Pacers are in for a world of pain here. I don't think they're going to win either game in OKC. I think that game three will be the one that Indy needs to get. And from that point forward, I just think this is a very short series here in favor of the Thunder. You can get sweep at plus 330 at FanDuel. Well, you're gonna try to press the Thunder and play up tempo and try to cause chaos and try to pressure them. It'll be fun to watch. Both teams are going to run and play up tempo. And you see that by the first game total, 230.5. I think the total or the spread's up to 9.5. Total's 230, 230.5. Man, I don't see it for Indy. I think this is a short series, a lopsided series. And I think Oklahoma City pretty shortly here is going to be holding up the trophy. And I was making the point, I think yesterday, if Oklahoma City somehow didn't win this championship, this would be basically the biggest upset in NBA Finals history. You could bring up Lakers Pistons in 04. By the odds, it's close. There's some other ones that are, been upsets, but this is going to be a very short series, I feel like, in favor of Oklahoma City. Do you have any feel, any bets you've made for this series?
I have to think about actual bets I'll make, but you brought up, if the Pacers were to win, this would be one of the biggest finals upsets in NBA history. I do have some context on that. Since 1985, 33 teams have been minus 400 series favorites or higher, and they are 30-3. Those upsets were 2023 Heat over Celtics, 2009 Magic over Cavs, 2004 Pistons over Lakers. At minus 700, though, the Thunder are the 11th team favored at that price in the NBA Finals. Over the last 50 years, those teams are 10-1 in winning the title. So definitely quite the mountain for the Pacers to overcome here. They entered the regular season with 66-1 odds to win the title. 80-1 odds once we got to the postseason, though. The Thunder, of course, entered the postseason as the favorite to win. This is interesting. You think it's going to be a short series. It looks like the market agrees with you here. OKC to win 4-1 is plus 250. OKC to sweep, plus 260 at DK, but you said plus 330 at FanDuel. The Thunder to win 4-2, plus 450, and the Thunder in 7, 5-1. The Pacers in 7, 15-1. So not looking great for them. But any exacta you would take there for the series?
Thunder 4-0.
Oh, geez. Wow.
Yes.
You are that confident.
I think it's a tough matchup. I don't think they're getting one in Oklahoma City. And then once it's 2-0, I mean, let's just do the math. They're 9.5, 10-point favorites in game one. They're going to be like 3 or 4 point favorites in game three. To me, it comes down to that, because if Oklahoma City can win that and they're going to be favored, once it gets to game four and it's 3-0, first of all, you can hedge if you got a plus 330. Is Indy going to rally and win a game down 3-0? Maybe, but usually the market doesn't like these teams that are down 3-0. Again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Who knows? Maybe Indy comes out and wins game one and sit here looking like an idiot. Wouldn't be the first or last time. I get that. I've been wrong before, but I think it's a tough matchup. I just think trying to fight fire with fire is a dangerous scenario here for Indy. I think Oklahoma City does what Indy does, but just does it better. I just think that people are getting caught up in the story here with Indy. And I think you brought up the series, the Heat and the Nuggets a couple years ago. People were so burned by the Heat, no pun intended, with all of their upsets that they were just afraid to pick them against Denver. And then they got to the finals and it was 1-1 and Denver won the next three games. Probably could have swept, probably should have swept. I think this is OKC. I think OKC is really good. You look at the net rating, you look at all of their analytics, they're far and above the best team. The Pacers, great story. They've played well in the postseason, but they're a four seed, so I do not give Indy much of a chance here.
No, that's a great point about people getting swept up in the story of the Pacers. It's easy to do so, easy to root for Indiana. Looking at the spread for game one, though, 9, 9.5. First time the Pacers have been a three-possession underdog since the Cavs series. They were an 8.5-point dog twice in that one on the road. The Thunder, of course, though, have just been dominant against the spread. So I don't think they have been. I mean, a spread like this is just not unusual for them. They've been an underdog four times all season. So, but even so, looking at this spread, I found some historical context for it. It's kind of interesting. It's the second biggest game one spread since 2001. So again, rare to be here. Any team to open the NBA finals.
What was the first one? What was the biggest spread? Was it one of those Warriors teams?
Oh, you got it. Yeah. Instead of reading these out, I'm just going to test you with trivia every time. It was Warriors minus 13 against the Cavs in 2018. That was the biggest
game one spread. They won the game in overtime.
Oh, wow. All right. You know your stuff.
That's the J.R. Smith game. That's the one where they were up by one. Oh. Cavs went to the line for two free throws. They made the first. They missed the second. They get the rebound, and J.R. Smith just dribbles out the clock, and everyone's telling him, shoot, you idiot. It's tied. We're not up by one. And then it goes to overtime. And I think they lost by 10 or so in overtime, but the Warriors did not cover. But that's the famous J.R. Smith game.
I miss that guy. He gave us a lot of great memes.
He did.
Okay, well, let me finish this one. So any team to open the NBA Finals with a game one spread of 8 or more are 9-1 in terms of winning the series. So again, oh, and you might know this. The only loss coming again from a team that we have already mentioned, the only team that to win the finals, after opening game one as an underdog of 8 to 9 points.
Pistons?
They went on to win. Yeah.
0-4
That's
Pistons.
Probably going to be the... it's going to be the exception to all of these trends.
Sure. They won that in 5-2. That wasn't even close. That was 1-1 after 2. The Lakers had to rally to win game 2. I remember that series pretty well, and the Pistons just buried them the next three games.
Yep. Well, looking at the betting splits now, at Circa, 60% of the bets, 74% of the handle on the Thunder minus 9. So Circa clients like the Thunder here. It looks a little bit different over at DraftKings. 67% of the bets are on the Pacers, but 60% of the handle on the Thunder. So again, that one leaning the Thunder way as well. All right, coming up next, we are going to restart at the top of the hour, get back into some baseball here. We'll give you an update on the Memorial Tournament as well. No surprise, who's leading?